I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Multi-level marketing companies are not new. Think of Avon, Tupperware, Amway, and Mary Kay Cosmetics. Today, though, they have grown in popularity in part because of the pandemic, the convenience of working from home, and the power of social media to sell most anything. And some, like LuLaRoe that sells clothing, have gotten in hot water for taking advantage of their sales force and making misleading claims about their products. Most of the largely female sales force working for these companies make little or no money, while people at the top are large, living large. We want to explore MLMs, as they are called, their appeal, their business model, why they target women, whether they are a Ponzi scheme or a cult, and the future of social retail, relationship marketing, direct sales, people selling products to each other. Joining us is Dr. William Keep. He's a professor of marketing and former dean at the College of New Jersey School of Business. And Bill Keep, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, and thank you for the invitation.
You're very welcome. And joining us by Skype from England is Hannah Martin. She's founder of the Talented Ladies Club and an anti-multi-level marketing investigative writer. And Hannah Martin, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Lovely to have you both with us. And let me begin with you, if I could, Bill Keep. How, and I have to say, I thought this would be a relatively easy show to do, but I found that the more I did the digging, the more complicated it became. So let's start with how direct sales, how this business model works. What's the design?
Well, there's sort of the theoretical design, and then there is what seems to happen in practice. So let me give you the theoretical design first. So multi-level marketing is a method of distributing products and services in which independent distributors will earn compensation from their own purchases and subsequent sales to consumers and from the purchases and subsequent sales made by those they directly and indirectly recruit. And that's typically called building a downline.
Right.
That's the theory. We have a couple of decades of limited data. And what that data shows us is that multi-level marketing is a process of endless recruitment whereby a company and top distributors profit from recruiting independent distributors who pursue the business opportunity, you know, based on selling products and services and recruiting others, with 95% or more of all participants experiencing a financial loss.
A loss. So it's not
a
like
loss.
So they lost money in this deal that they made with the product company.
Right. The MLM companies will that do report data, and there's no requirement that they report this, but the ones that do will show very, very small average net incomes. But once you include expenditures, which they never include, you're looking at a financial loss.
Is that a Ponzi scheme?
It wouldn't be a Ponzi scheme. It could be a pyramid scheme. And the difference between a Ponzi scheme and a pyramid scheme is a Ponzi scheme relies on the voluntary participation of people who are pursuing an above-average reward, like the Madoff scheme. A pyramid scheme is structurally built to reward people for recruiting others. And so all the MLM companies, and there have been nearly 30 of them successfully prosecuted between 1996 and now, they have all been MLM companies who have been proven to be pyramid schemes and then subsequently either shut down or they had to remove the MLM model, which effectively shut them down.
Wow. Hannah Martin, let me get you in on the conversation. You started your organization, the Talented Ladies Club, back in 2013. First of all, what is this club about?
It's primarily for women, although we also have male readers as well. It was created because I noticed that there were a lot of women amongst my friends who were professional women, ambitious, had successful careers. Then they had children and they weren't able to pursue their career in the same way as before. And around the time I launched the site, there was nothing really online to inspire these women, give them hope or give any information. So that's the original purpose behind launching the site. But today we inspire women in general. Many of our readers aren't women, and I say some of them are men.
And you are, I described you as an anti-multi-level marketing investigative writer. Why are you opposed to these MLMs?
I didn't really know much about them until I watched the documentary Betty and Zero a few years ago, and I was horrified. I was horrified at how they took money from the weakest people, and they made a very small number of people rich at the loss of a huge number of people. And they often preyed on some of the weaker members of society, or certainly people who had trouble earning money. And I just felt it was really unjust. And although that documentary was about Herbalife, the more I looked into it, and I realized there was this whole industry out there that operated in the same way. And I just started writing articles on it because obviously it's the opposite to what I wanted to do, which
Right.
was to genuinely empower people and help them make good money doing what they do well. This is kind of the opposite of that. So yeah, I started investigating it, and just the more I mean, as you probably found, as you say, once you started looking into this, the more horrified you are and the more you uncover. I also find it sort of fascinating from a psychological point of view how these companies recruit, how they retain people, and how they basically get people to keep spending money even when they're losing money.
Well, I want to pick up on all that, but let me just play an ad from LuLaRoe. And this is 2019. LuLaRoe released a commercial called "Allow Us to Reintroduce Ourselves." We are LuLaRoe. Let's give it a listen.
We are mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, sisters, and brothers. We are a team, building a community, making a difference through social retail. We are pioneers, changing the world. We are LuLaRoe.
So to you, Bill Keep, I mean, that's a very powerful ad, right? Who wouldn't want to be part of that?
Right. It's really just a retention message. In other
Meaning,
words,
yeah, go ahead.
as long as you continue as an active distributor, you must maintain your own purchase behavior. So as long as I can keep you trying, I can keep you buying. And these efforts are to reinforce this notion that you're part of something bigger, part of something important. And even if you're not successful now, you will be if you hang in there.
Let me go back to you, Hannah Martin. And you talked from your perspective that these companies really prey on what you describe as sort of weaker, maybe more vulnerable parts of society. And it seems like largely their sales force, whatever language you want to use, are women. So they target women. And the products seem to be designed
Yes.
largely for women.
Absolutely. I mean, it's all around the idea that women are at home with children predominantly. They can't go and earn money in the same way they did before. But it's not just mothers. They target people who are disabled, people who have social anxiety, anyone who struggles to earn money, or maybe is on a low income or they're undocumented, anyone who struggles to earn money in a traditional way. But if you notice with that commercial you played just then, it's not factual. It's not saying join this and you will earn this much money. There's a lot of sort of waffle. There's a lot of emotional language used. It's all about joining an opportunity and being part of something bigger than you, because they try and disguise the fact that actually it isn't a real business opportunity. So they use psychology to recruit you and as Bill says, to retain you as well.
And just going back to you, Bill Keep, in terms of sort of understanding then the mechanics of how this works. So let's say, I want to sell some LuLaRoe product. How do I do it? How do I get into this quote unquote business?
Right. Well, you're going to have to buy some inventory, and you're going to have to maintain your purchase of inventory, and they are going to encourage you, of course, to buy more inventory. There's two ways, generally two ways, to make income. One would be for you to then subsequently sell your inventory to consumers who are not distributors, who are not affiliated with LuLaRoe. The second way would be for you to recruit others who then would buy inventory and become distributors. And if you just think about these purchases, I can purchase $5,000 worth of inventory and then try to sell them one by one to consumers I don't know. Or I can recruit others who will then buy $5,000 of inventory, and they will recruit others who will buy $1,000 of inventory, and I get a commission on all that.
That's the
So
pyramid,
there's
right?
this, right, that's the strong, strong emphasis on recruitment. And so both MLM, pyramid schemes, and Ponzi schemes are all based on this notion of endless chain recruitment. So there are critics of the industry who have said that all MLMs must be pyramid schemes. I have not said that, in part because I can't seem to get enough data. This is a notoriously opaque industry.
And why is that?
They like it that way.
and they get to call the shots, right? But don't we have an FTC that is supposed to, you know, be a bit of a watchdog for us?
We do. And like all agencies, you know, they are subject to limited resources and lots of competing priorities. The FTC is also responsible for antitrust, for example. The FTC interest in this issue has waxed and waned over the last, say, 50 years. In the 1970s, they were very active. They got very quiet in the 1980s. In the 1990s, they got active again. So it's gone back and forth. And we have just rolled off a period where we had a president who had his own MLM company. So now we're in a period where the FTC seems a little more interested in what's going on in the industry.
And that would be former President Trump, correct?
Correct.
Correct. Hannah, Martin, let me go back to you. And one of the things that I learned, and if basically 95% of people lose money if they're part of an MLM, what you end up selling to you become your own customer. How does that happen?
Yeah, that's right. So what most companies will say is that there's no requirement for you to purchase. You know, there's no kind of monthly thing. But actually, when you look into these companies, there is. When you join it, yes, you can simply kind of buy for personal use. But if you start selling and you want to participate in the compensation plan, you normally need to have an active, what they call an active requirement, which is maybe around $200 a month. So that's the amount of money you need to be selling in theory. Actually, it's really hard to sell these products. So what most people do from anecdotal experience people I've talked to is they buy the products themselves to stay within the company. They buy it telling themselves, oh, I'm going to sell it eventually. Like it's going to be sold at some point. They also buy to acquire promotions or bonuses themselves and their upline. So what happens is that people end up amassing garages and spare rooms full of products that they can't sell, and that's where like the huge loss comes in, where people end up with loss, and then sunk cost fallacy hits, whereby they think, well, I'm already down this much money. If I just hang on, you know, a bit like a gambler, oh, I just need one good month, I'll sell it eventually. So they stay in the company hoping to make the money back, and of course all the time they're in the company, they're being told by their upline, yeah, it's really easy, look how much I'm making. They kind of think there's something wrong with them. If they just try harder, they buy another mindset program, they'll somehow unlock the way to selling.
Well, we have to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Hannah Martin. She's founder of the Talented Ladies Club. She is an multi-level marketing investigative writer. We are talking about multi-level marketing companies. Also with us is Dr. William Keep. He's a professor of marketing, former dean at the College of New Jersey School of Business. We've got another guest waiting in the wings. In the meantime, we want to hear from you. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with our guests about the rise and problem with direct sales companies. We're talking about the growth of these companies called MLMs, accused of promoting pyramid schemes, under fire for taking advantage of vulnerable women, and misleading claims about their products. And joining us now is Josie Nykoy. She's a YouTuber, former distributor for three different MLM companies involving health and fitness, wine and skincare, and cosmetic products. And back in May 2020, she posted a video on her YouTube channel titled "Why I Quit the MLM Industry at the Top." This was after deciding to open up about her experience with MLMs, even though she knew the reaction she would get would be negative from former friends and colleagues. Let's give it a quick listen.
Once a year, MLM companies love to rent out stadiums and event centers and slap their name all over it. They pay thousands of dollars to hire self-help speakers who know how to strategically pump you up as they encourage you to go for more. And I fell for all of it. I was a product of the product. I even got to be on those stages and accept awards. So where did it go so wrong? When I got to peek behind the curtain of the 1% in three different companies, and I realized, wait, it's not the company. The system is designed to fail.
And Josie Nicoy, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I was watching that video yesterday, and it works on the radio. It's very powerful. Did you get a lot of negative reaction to posting it?
From the people that I knew in the MLM industry and the MLM people who followed me, because I did used to be higher up. Yeah, I mean, it was expected, but I was actually really surprised how the anti-MLM community embraced me. That wasn't something I expected. I expected them to be upset with me because I was at the top, and they were so kind, and they embraced me, and they were happy I was speaking out.
Well, let's just talk a little bit about how you got into this business. You were a hairstylist for a while. You worked for, what, for about 6 years? And as you said, you did pretty darn well working for some of these companies. What attracted you?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
What attracted you? Why did you want, you know, you were working as a hairstylist. Why did you want to be part of a MLM sales force?
For me, there were really two reasons. The first, the biggest reason, was financial vulnerability. I was going to physical therapy three times a week, having to see a chiropractor three times a week for a neck injury that I sustained that was being caused a lot of irritation through repetition motion at my job. And I remember the medical debt just piling up, even though I had supposedly good health insurance. And I remember thinking, what can I do? I can't work any more than I already am. And so I had tried the products of this health and fitness company, and I really liked the products. I thought the products were great. And I happened to see a video from somebody in the top 1% who was making millions a year, and she had completely changed her life. And I was enamored. And I reached out to her on Facebook, and it started from there. And she just would say, you know, just share the story, just share, you know, why you like the product. And then it gradually evolved into entering into all these little private training groups and private team groups. And, now we're going to have you read these certain books. Now we're going to have you look at all this certain information online. And the indoctrination kind of started from there. Hmm. But the first thing that really stood out, which was probably the second reason I joined, was the community. When I joined, I was welcomed into this group of like what they call a sisterhood, and I was love bombed, and I was told like, oh my gosh, you can do this, you know, we're going to help you, you're going to reach your dreams, you're going to become debt free, you're going to do all these great things, we got your back. And I had left the church about 4 or 5 years before that, and I missed that community, and I just thought, oh my gosh, these people are so positive and happy.
Well,
and I was attracted to it.
I hear you. And you did well. I mean, you made it to the top 1%. So, and one can hear your enthusiasm, you know, on the radio. So what made you good at this?
Well, at the time, I thought I was good because I was a really hard worker. And when my upline would say jump, I said, how high? And I just thought, okay, I'm being positive. I'm doing everything they tell me to do. I'm believing in myself. I'm writing down my goals. I'm working really, really hard, and I'm succeeding. Oh my gosh, anyone can do this. They just have to want it bad enough. But there's a lot of people who work really hard and believe and are positive, and they lose money in these companies. And it wasn't until I got out that I realized it had everything to do with my network. It's all about the size of your network. And you can't succeed in these companies unless you have a large network.
Well, let me go back to our other two guests, Hannah Martin and William Keep. To you, Hannah Martin, and we were talking about how these companies target women. They have the kind of, you know, hey girl, this kind of pitch, using even the language of sisterhood and even feminism. Help us understand that better. Do we have Hannah?
Technique to recruit people, and especially as you know, if you have a large network, it's amazing, but their most people who join are quite lonely. So it's really seductive to come into this community, and you are loved one when you go in. They call each other sisters. The problem with that is that you don't want to leave, because if anyone in that community starts to kind of think, well, actually, I'm not making money here, and they voice it, they are ostracized from that group, because the community depends on everyone working towards that same goal and having that positivity. So if anyone expresses any negativity, they are either told to get back in line or they're excluded from the group. And if you leave that community, you're often ostracized again, because they don't want you tainting the rest of the group. The rest of the group has to believe they're making money, has to believe they stay in. So it's a false community. It's conditional. It's based upon you remaining in the company and bringing money into the company.
Josie, you call that toxic positivity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is no doubts, no questioning, nothing negative is allowed. What, allowed to be uttered?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the overgeneralization of a happiness, positive state of mind at all times. And, it really invalidates the human experience of real emotions like anger, sadness, grief. And you can't have those things, because then they tell you, wow, you're being negative, that's toxic, and you're going to attract toxic things to your business. So your business isn't going to succeed. So if you're not succeeding, it's probably because you have a negative mindset. So you shut up and you put up.
Let me get you back in on the conversation, William Keep. The way that Josie is describing her experience, so she did rather well, but it felt as if she was, in a sense, kind of scamming people. And I wonder if you could sort of speak to what we heard, the sort of upline and downline, understanding the this business model.
Sure. So her success was based, as she said, on building a big network, and the people in her network overwhelmingly lost money, the percentage of people in her network. She was pursuing it because she was convinced by the people above her that the success was possible for everybody, and you will hear that in some of the pitches. Everyone can be successful, you just need to work hard at it, and you need to believe in it. The reality is, structurally, mathematically, everyone cannot be successful and produce the results that they claim are possible. So in a sense, the MLM model is almost like a lottery where the people who end up walking away with the reward depend on the losses of others.
And Josie, my understanding, and also reading other people's experiences, that this notion of being always on. I mean, a lot of these MLMs promise you freedom and you can do this in your spare time, and it's, you're your own boss. But it ends up being kind of a 24/7 operation.
It's 24/7, 365. I remember people would kind of get annoyed around holidays, because then obviously people are rightfully so spending time with their families, but it's like, oh, that's time away from the business. And so you were always on. I remember I couldn't even really take off a weekend. Like if I took a weekend and didn't post in my team group or whatever, I'd start getting messages like, hey, are you okay? I haven't seen you post. What's going on? We were told to post like 3 to 5 times a day. They basically teach you to become an influencer. That's what they want you to do. So then you have a larger network and you can recruit from your social media. And you build it up like that.
And to you, Hannah Martin, are we talking about a cult here? It certainly seems to have some of the hallmarks.
Absolutely. It is very cult-like. I mean, as Josie just described, cults keep you busy. They steal your time. They steal your sleep even. I mean, everyone I've ever interviewed who's left an MLM, whether they were at the top like Josie or at the bottom, have all said that, they were told even like when you're in the toilet or the kettle's boiling, you can fill that time. They were expected to work when they were in labor and giving birth. It takes your time. And then that kind of cult thing where it doesn't allow free thinking. You have to have the cult think. And if anyone doesn't follow the cult line, they're either retrained or they're excluded.
So I'm imagining someone on the toilet, what they're on their cell phone or giving birth, for God's sake,
yes,
on their cell phone. And someone is saying, you didn't tweet today. Hannah?
Yeah, absolutely. And they're told, I mean, because I'm in the UK and I interviewed someone who worked for an MLM and her upline was in America. And she was expected to be at 6 a.m. UK time on things, but like 2 in the morning as well, when the American market was up, she was expected to be online then. She was literally expected to be online virtually for 20 hours a day. It is relentless. And you're told if you fail, you're told you didn't work hard enough. And so there were people who were working 20 hours a day. Their marriages were on the line. They were losing family and friends. They weren't making money because of the business model. And they're told that they were a personal failure because they didn't work hard enough.
And I heard from you, Josie. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can tell you when it comes to the pregnancy thing, we would have women who were higher up and they would give birth. They're still in the hospital. It's literally like an hour after they gave birth and they have a selfie of themselves holding their newborn and they're still in their hospital gown in the bed. And they're like, guys, today I gave birth to this sweet baby and it's been such a blessing. But you know what else is a blessing? I just recruited 5 people today as well. And you know why? Because this company has blessed my family. They have helped me. I wouldn't even be able to do this if it wasn't for this family. I'm going to be able to afford for this baby. It always goes back to the mission statement of the MLM. And that's what these MLMs hide behind. And that's how they trick people to stay in longer, because they say, we're helping people. And by you offering this opportunity to others, you're helping people. And that shows that you're a good person. And if you don't offer this to other people, this business opportunity, and if you don't get out of your comfort zone, then you're a selfish, negative person who won't see any success in life, and you'll always just have a job. And they teach you that job stands for just over broke.
Just over broke?
Mm-hmm.
Let me read a tweet from Steve, and I want to toss this to you, Bill. Steve says, multi-level marketing companies are not a business. The language of business belongs to products with true consumer demand. These are faith-based organizations that exploit our greatest insecurities, time with loved ones, and contributing to something meaningful. Do you think he's onto something there?
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Let me just toss this first to Bill, and then I'll toss it to everybody else. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, first of all, there's often a strong Christian tone. There's a strong family tone. The irony here is two things. First of all, you're being invited into a system and a structure that produces an earnings distribution that is far, far, far more unequal than our economy. In other words, they're saying if you're not succeeding in our economy, if you just have a J-O-B, you should join this system where you'll do better. But in truth, you won't do better because almost all the money is going to a very, very small percentage of people, even worse than our income distribution in general. Yeah. The second thing is the social harm that they're talking about. You can imagine being the husband of a wife who's tweeting after just giving birth to a baby, or the sister or the friend of someone like that. When the people get really deeply involved, and it's sometimes men too, there's real harm to the family and friendships.
Did you find that to be true, Josie?
Yeah, I saw a lot of friendships end, including some of my own. When I left the company, my best friend of 8 years who had signed up under me blocked me and called me a negative person. I saw marriages fall apart because they're always on. And everything is built around emotional hype. Like, we weren't supposed to look at numbers. We weren't supposed to look at the quote-unquote statistics, because they would say, oh, the numbers on our income disclosure and the statistics out there about multi-level marketing, they're inaccurate because they don't count for people who just join for the discount. But everybody who joins for the discount is being groomed to become a recruiter to make money. It's why you can't join an MLM company without first giving over your social security information, because they expect you to earn money. And if you earn money, they're going to report it to the IRS.
And it's a 1099, right? So you're not, you have to take care of your own taxes.
Correct. And you're not informed about those things. I was charged $11,500 by the IRS for a fine, because once I got in a little bit of a higher income bracket, I was not paying quarterly taxes. I was paying my annual taxes, how I did as a hairstylist. And they were like, oh, no, no, you have to pay quarterly taxes. And I was slapped with this huge fine. And I remember thinking, well, why didn't my upline, who's making millions a year, why didn't she just take 5 minutes to tell me this? Like, you know, but they don't talk about numbers with you. And I don't know if it's because they don't expect you to make money or they don't want you to look at the real data. They just, it's all emotional hype, and it's all about self-help and setting these goals and staying true to the mission statement.
And all of you have talked about upline and downline. Josie, upline are the people above you, right, in the hierarchy?
Yes, sometimes called your sponsor.
Right. And the people downline are the people that you have recruited.
Yes, and your upline is specifically the person you join under. It's the one person you join under. And then your downline is everyone below you.
And Hannah, you're joining us from England. So obviously we're not talking about just America. This is what, international?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's global. Yes.
With the same, basically the same business structure, the same promotion around the world?
Yeah, identical. I mean, obviously there will be cultural nuances, but yes, you know, we have in most of the big companies you have in the US, we have in the UK, we've got the same compensation plan. It works the same way. Recruitment works in the same way. Retention, it's pretty much identical.
And Bill, you were talking about, and I mentioned a company in my introduction, LuLaRoe, that has gotten into hot water. Is this a sustainable business model?
It is. And I wouldn't call it a business model, and I agree with the earlier quote from the tweet you read. In the case of LuLaRoe, they're prosecuted by the state of Washington for being a pyramid scheme. Mm-hmm. In 2019, a company called AdvoCare, whose national spokesperson was the quarterback, Drew Brees, they had operated for 25 years when the FTC charged them with operating a pyramid scheme. They didn't even present a defense.
Wow.
And they paid a large fine. And they were an award-winning member of the national trade association called the Direct Selling Association. And I just wanted to throw in one other issue here. This industry doesn't just groom distributors and participants. This industry grooms politicians.
Oh, well, you know what? We have to take a very short break, and I do want to pick up on that after this very short break, talking about MLMs, or multi-level marketing companies. This is also known as direct sales or relationship marketing or social retail, people selling products to each other. William Keep is professor of marketing, former dean at the College of New Jersey School of Business. Hannah Martin joining us from England, founder of Talented Ladies Club and an anti-multi-level marketing investigative writer. And Josie Nikoy is a YouTuber, former multi-level marketing distributor. And we do want to hear from you, especially if you have gotten into this line of work. You can email us, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can pick up the phone and give us a call. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about MLMs. And here's a promotional video from the nutrition supplement company Herbalife posted on their YouTube channel this week. And it features a woman named Trina, referred to as an Herbalife small business owner.
I manage my own small business selling Herbalife nutrition products. I help my customers throughout their personal journey to better health and wellness. I also help people make extra income by starting their own part-time business.
Let me just toss something quick to you, Bill Keeb, and I do want to talk about the political part of this. Is she a small business owner?
Not really. She doesn't have control on the product she sells. She doesn't have a control on the prices of the product she sells. She really is a person who's recruiting others. And when she brings in a customer, a non-distributor customer, to help them with their life journey, as she says, she is grooming them to become a distributor.
And you mentioned before the break about the politics of these companies. You mentioned former President Trump. My understanding is that Senator Sinema of Arizona gets a lot of money from some of these direct sales companies. Who else? What should we know about that?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'll give you two quick examples. One is that this industry in the United States, just looking at industry data, is less than 1% total U.S. retail sales.
Okay. Tiny.
Less than 1%. And yet it has its own congressional caucus. And so they have dozens of congressmen and women who have been received benefited from their relationship with this industry and who therefore advocate for it. One of the, on the Senate side, Marsha Blackburn is a big advocate for the industry. The other example I give is that through about the first half of the 20th century, the states passed what were called endless chain recruitment laws. They made endless chain recruitment illegal. And the Direct Selling Association now proudly points to the fact that through their lobbying efforts, they have gotten 27 states to change their laws.
Wow. So it's easier to open a company now.
It's easier to operate in these states. They actually, interestingly to us anyhow, the industry critics, Washington State was one of the states where they did get the legislature to change the law, and yet the prosecutors there were still successful in prosecuting LuLaRoe. So they haven't completely inoculated themselves, but they're working on it.
Yeah. How about over in England, Hannah Martin?
Yeah, I mean, our former Prime Minister, when she was Home Secretary, Theresa May, opened the Juice Plus's UK headquarters. And we've also had Amway. They managed to get a government minister to promote the MLM business model in Parliament. So yeah, they have just as much influence in the UK government.
Josie, let me go back to you. And in the video that you posted on your YouTube channel, it begins with this very splashy event. It's in Las Vegas. There are stars there. People are having fun. I mean, it feels like the company has just pulled out all its stops. And, you know, you're there. Other sales reps are there. Help us understand sort of how that factors into, again, I guess this business model that we've been talking about, what that meant for people like you. And you got awards for, you know, for the kind of production that you did.
Yeah, I got awards. I got recognition. By the time I had earned the car in my last company, I was becoming very disillusioned. It was my last year. I was becoming extremely disillusioned with what I was seeing, and I actually turned the car down. I just didn't trust that I would. I didn't trust the company either, and they were telling me you're going to have to buy around $1,200 worth of product a month.
Whoa!
But you'll get a $500 car payment. And
wait a minute, I'm doing the math there, but okay, I hear you.
Right, exactly. And I just didn't trust what I was seeing behind the scenes. By the time I got to walk across the stage, which was also that same year that I earned the car, I remember thinking like, oh, wow, like I'm in this glitzy dress. There's flashy lights everywhere. This is a huge, cool production. But as soon as I walked across the stage, I just thought all this stress wasn't worth it. All this stress was not worth it. And I would see my mentors and my uplines, who were the million-dollar earners, constantly getting sick and having to be hospitalized from stress. And they were getting all these illnesses that the doctors couldn't diagnose, but they were like, I think it's caused by stress, and you need to slow down, which you can never do when in an MLM company. You can never slow down. And it was really scary what I was seeing behind the scenes. Nobody was happy. All these six- and seven-figure earners who were earning so much and posting all this, these great posts on Facebook and Instagram, sharing their influencer lifestyle and showing all these flashy cars and whatnot. It's all a facade, because behind the scenes, everybody was overworked, stressed, miserable, and trying to fight off, you know, that depression, because you can only show happiness, joy, and positivity, and that gets to you after a while.
Indeed. In this video, though, Josie, you get pretty emotional. You talk about your guilt. You talk about the shame, perhaps how you treated, you know, the downline people that were part of your team. It was, you know, you clearly were feeling a lot of emotions.
Yeah, I still do to this day. Like I feel guilty that, because I believed when I was in that I was helping women. I truly believe that I was helping women and giving them a better opportunity. And knowing everything I know now, knowing how it really operates, what everything is designed to do with the manipulation and the gaslighting and the shunning, and then how you self-blame yourself. I just think, I hope I never made anybody feel like that. But unfortunately, in the MLM industry, the victim becomes the perpetrator.
Wow. And the sales rep becomes the buyer. I mean, for a lot of people, they end up buying their own, they become their own customer, correct?
There are companies where you have to front load and buy a lot of product and have it in stock to give to sell to people. That was what my last company was like. My first company, though, the health and fitness one, you didn't have to do that. People could just use your link and go online and buy their own product and get it shipped directly to them. However, having been in both and been at the top in both, I can tell you that either one, no one is less predatory. They're both very predatory models.
Hannah, let me go back to you and just picking up on what Josie was saying there about just how it felt to leave. And as you both have said, it provides community, a sense of sisterhood and togetherness. And for people, as you describe, who are vulnerable, I can imagine the emotion of losing this or thinking you're going to make some money in this company and you end up making nothing or even losing money, the kind of humiliation that must go along with that.
Absolutely. I mean, I've interviewed quite a few people who've left, and without exception, it's more like a therapy session than anything else. And often I'm the first person they've really talked to about it because there's so much shame attached to it. When you join an MLM, you're forced to almost change your personality. As Josie said, it's this toxic positivity. You know, you're changing the way you share posts on social media. You're constantly recruiting. You're telling everyone how happy you are. Meanwhile, you're making no money. And then you're told you're not making money because there's something wrong with you. You're not working hard enough. So when they leave, they've got so much shame. And it's not really about the money they've lost. It's about the psychological damage it's done to them. Mm-hmm. And they can't then go back to their family and friends and their husband because they've alienated these people. Or they'll just say, you know, yeah, I told you all along that was wrong, and they can't really talk about it. It's a really isolating experience when you leave, and also how much hope you've lost, because they sell you on hope, and all the time you'll remain in a company you have hope, and when you leave you've lost all your hopes and dreams. You're back where you started, but you're worse off financially, you're worse off psychologically, and you've lost all hope.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking. Josie, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, no, everything she's saying is correct. I mean, when I left, I'd always naturally been a happy-go-lucky, positive, upbeat person, and I just couldn't shake this depression and this guilt and this shame I was feeling. And I just was thinking, like, what's wrong with me? Like, write down some goals, move on with your life. You know, it didn't work out how you thought it would, but try and move on. And I couldn't. And I didn't understand what happened to me until I heard about something called the BITE model, which stands for Behavior, Information, Thought, and Emotional Control. And it's a tool used to recognize high control groups or cults. And it was designed by Dr. Stephen Hassan, who's a cult expert and psychologist. And once I dived into that world, because I'm like, oh no, I wasn't in a cult, please, no way. And once I dived into that world, everything started making sense. And so for anyone who's listening and who does feel that shame, remember that you were lied to, because had you have known everything going into it when you started, you would have said, no, this probably isn't for me, I'm good. But you were lied to, things were kept from you, so you were a victim and you're not at fault. Like, yes, you may have done some bad things, but you were trapped in a cult.
Let me read some comments, and I have a question for you, Bill Keep. Renee says, I'm sitting here in my office surrounded by thousands of dollars of inventory in one such business. They build on our basic human need to belong. I've been going back and forth about whether to drop out. Thank you for the truth. Thanks, Renee. And also from Patricia, many years ago, my husband and I attended an Amway meeting. At the first break, we were asked to leave. I had asked too many questions. These pyramid companies have been around for decades. New medium, same message. An email from Deb. What's the difference between modern MLM and the older companies like Tupperware and Avon? And I'm tossing that to you, Bill Keep. And I mentioned some of those older companies in my introduction. Are we talking about something different, or is it a variation on a theme?
We're talking about something that changed. So Avon was formed in the late 1800s, initially as the California Perfume Company, because California was an exotic place at the time. And they developed a direct selling, a single level direct selling model, in a sense almost built off of a peddler model. So this is an urbanization period for the U.S., and so women were mostly at home, and they would then sell door to door to friends and family members and neighbors in a single level model, which means if they sold product to customers, they made money and the company made money. And if they didn't sell product to customers, they didn't make money and the company didn't. And so it's a very straightforward kind of model. And Avon succeeded enormously with this model through the 1960s. By the 1980s, this model was suffering. And even the party plan, which was something Tupperware was built on, was also suffering. So every one of these single level firms switch to multi-level marketing.
And that's where social media comes in, correct?
And social media is like putting everything that existed before on steroids. And just to the point that was being made earlier, this is affinity-based marketing where you hear trust-based lies. Lies that are able to get traction because the person who's telling you the lie, you trust them. And you trust them because there's some affinity there. It's women. It's women who just had babies. It's women who are at home. It's someone who just lost their job or something like that.
Well, again, and this is a question that hovers over our conversation, a tweet from Dana. How do these companies evade pyramid scheme laws? They're so obviously pyramid schemes. And Bill, keep on back to you.
Right. So we do not have a federal law that defines a pyramid scheme. We have case law. In other words, from 1996 until now, the FTC has built a series of successful prosecutions based on case law, charging them firms with being pyramid schemes. And when you do it this way, you build this body of case law, but it takes time. It will take anywhere between, say, 2 to 7 years to prosecute a firm. And the reason that firms fight so hard is a pyramid scheme charge is existential. If we win, if the FTC wins, the company goes away. And so the company fights with everything they can. The large MLM companies contract with some of the largest international law firms in the, you know, I've said international, but the largest law firms in the world. And so they have some of the top Harvard-trained lawyers at their disposal to fight the FTC.
Let me read another comment. This is from John, and I'll put this to you, Josie, and to you, Hannah. John says, I remember how greatly formed my opinion on MLM was by the time I was a junior in high school. My parents did Juice Plus, and before that, some 3D camera company that was just ridiculous. This is John writing. The whole energy and illusion of it was so highly unappealing, I had to tell my parents to chill out. They were becoming so gross as humans. And Josie is someone who was in this business, was selling products. Can you relate to that?
Yeah, I mean, I, at the time, with the products I was using, I loved them. And I will say, like, the product, and I said this in my first video, because I felt like the anti-MLM community got this wrong a lot. They would say, all the products suck. You know the products don't work. They're all crap. And I had to say, no, that's not actually true. There are some really good products in these companies. Sure, they're overpriced, but there are some good products. The product is not the problem. The product is the business model, the recruitment tactics, the cult-like tactics that get used on you. And it is, like you said, all an illusion. And in all my anti-MLM videos, I always use whatever company I'm talking about. I use videos of their conferences, and I show it. And I've had people before being like, all these stock footages of these super happy people are stupid. You shouldn't use them. And I'm like, this isn't stock footage. This is their actual videos. And that's that facade, that happy, smiley, shiny person. And unfortunately, when you're in a vulnerable place, you fall for that because you want that.
Hannah, we have about 20 seconds. I've given you the last word. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
I was going to agree. You know, the MLMs are very much like other abusive relationships. That's how I liken them. Mm-hmm. And you start out, someone doesn't slap you on day one on the first date in an abusive relationship, that it creeps up over time. And MLMs are very much the same way. I think generally, I think people can gather the messaging from the three of us on here is don't join one. And I say, if you do join one, do the finances. Keep track of how much money you spend, how much time you spend, and how much money you earn. The truth will always come down to money.
A quick comment from Nancy, who sold Tupperware for 3 years, and she thought it was a really nice company. Just to add to our conversation, Josie Nicoy, thank you for joining us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Hannah Martin, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And William Keep, thanks for joining us on Radio Times as well, talking about MLM.
Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. To replay this hour and many more, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs. And you can always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.